Hello and welcome to Build Momentum, where we help education organizations blow past their competitors with strategies that make an impact. We think beyond traditional press releases and generic communication tactics and seek out big, bold ideas to create meaningful results for our clients. I'm your host, Sarah Williamson, and I've spent more than 15 years in public relations for the education sector, where our team has learned what works and what doesn't when it comes to PR. From launching groundbreaking new industry awards to landing sought-after panels at the most prestigious shows, we absolutely love this stuff. But the best part is, we have an opportunity to interview some of the smartest people we know who share their knowledge and strategies for success right here on the show. If you enjoy what you hear, we would so appreciate if you please take a moment to drop us a review on whatever platform you listen. And if you want to learn more about us, visit swpr-group.com. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Let's dive into the show. And on today's episode, we have Michael Hall, the founder of Strong Fathers, a nonprofit that focuses on family engagement programs. He's a husband and father of two sons. Michael has worked with more than 130,000 fathers and parents nationwide. That could be even higher now. You'll have to let me know, Michael. And he was honored as a 2012 White House Fatherhood Champion of Change. He's also a former middle school teacher and has a circuitous path that led him to partnering with school districts to better support fathers and ultimately their students. Welcome, Michael, to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, so we're at 225,000 dads face-to-face. And like I told you this morning, we had 154 dads in one of our rural schools here local. And so, you know, our numbers were not as quite as high last year because we were virtual.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got all this gray hair because of that. A lot of miles and a lot of programs. We were pre-COVID, we were doing about 7 programs a week. And so if you're getting 100, 200 dads a program, you can start racking those guys up pretty quick. But we've been doing it. We're in our 19th school year. So we've been doing this a while.
Well, let's back up for a minute. I just totally love your mission and your passion for supporting fathers and students. Would you share your story with our listeners so they understand more about you?
Yeah. So I was a special ed teacher. I taught special ed in middle school. And then tell people I'm a recovering middle school principal. And so I was a middle school principal for 4 years. And in that time, you know, parent engagement is important. Schools kind of know that, kind of talk about it, but they don't know what to do about it. And I'm really in middle school is really tough. So I kept seeing stuff about parent engagement. And I'm like, we've got to find a way. So I did some training with different groups. And I'm like, that's okay. But that doesn't appeal to me as a dad. I was a dad of young kids at the time. I was actually a pretty young principal. I was a principal at 28. So my kids were, you know.
That is very young.
Yeah. We all should have known better, but it worked out. I mean, we were successful. I grew up in the school business. My dad was a coach. My mom was on the school board. And so I had a lot of training just about how schools work prior to even becoming a teacher. That's what our family did and still does. And so trying to get dads involved, I worked with a group, or trying to get parents involved, I worked with a group out of Austin called the Center for Successful Fathering. And it lit me up both professionally, but it also lit me up personally because I was trying to do my job and try to raise kids. And that wasn't always working out too well. And it was in a pretty tough situation. I became the principal. I replaced the guy they named the building after. So if you want some job advice, don't come in behind the guy. He had been the principal there like 32 years. I was 29 when I came in. I wasn't even breathing when you started this gig. Teacher, you know, my teachers were like older and they're like, what do we call you? I'm like, Mr. Hall. I mean, that's my job. It's, you know, but so I did my first dad's day. And January 31st, 1999, in my school, telling these guys, hey, if you're not around, here's the bad stuff that happens to your kids. If you're around and doing the job, here's what good things happen to your kid. And in that moment, and in the next couple of weeks, I realized I was spending my time raising their kids, not my own. And so had a little pressure and some issues going on at school, some politics and all that. And so got a little pressure put on me. And my wife was like, man, I just hate this. And she said, she was a preacher's kid and I was a coach's kid. And she goes, so when they don't like us or we don't like them, we have to move. I go, yeah, that's how I grew up. That's how you grew up. She goes, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, yeah, I can kind of agree. So I resigned. I finished out the year strong. You know, I did my job, but I went back to teaching. My wife went back to teaching. And while I was teaching that next year, I was doing more and more dad stuff because I'd gotten lit up on this. The center got a grant. And so they hired me the next school year. I worked for them for 3 years, developing programs, trying to develop business in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where I live. And like a lot of small nonprofits, egos got in the way, founder, what they call founder syndrome. So the whole thing imploded. And so Strong Fathers is actually a for-profit business. I just say we have a nonprofit checkbook. And I did that because I didn't know if I was going to make a go of it, right? I didn't know if we could pull it off. And I didn't want a board moving us away from mission. I think nonprofits are great. I run another nonprofit for an orphanage in Ghana. I'm not against nonprofits, but for my business, two things came about. I didn't want a board moving us to something just for the money. I wanted to stick to mission. I also wanted schools to pay for something of value. When I was at a nonprofit, they kind of expected us to either have the money, or if we got the money, or in nonprofits that I worked around, they got the money, but it was just trying to get through the money to the next money. And not that they weren't doing good work, but I'm like, a lot of fatherhood programs that I started with, you know, that were doing fatherhood stuff when I started Strong Fathers, moved to mentoring, or they moved. And then what they did is they moved to where the money was, not to where the work was. So we've been doing fatherhood work. We've written, you know, I've got five curricula that I use in different areas. 0 to 3, 3 to 5. Our bread and butter is elementary and middle school work. I've got some high school programs that I do. I've got a 10-week court-ordered class. So we do that, and we work in schools and we work in Head Starts. And so I'm trying to get where dads are. That's my mission. Schools and Head Starts are where we're going to get paid for that. But that's also where all the kids are, because this work really is about impacting kids. And so schools have all the kids. That's why I go to schools and Head Starts. And that's my, you know, that's definitely my comfort zone. That's my people. That's my place. My wife is a teacher. My son's a teacher. My sister's a teacher. My brother's a teacher and a coach. My mom is back on the school board at 78. So yeah, this is what we do, you know? And so this is kind of a way, I mean, our year is August to May, not, you know, January to December by any means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. So it seems like it's rare to find a program that's really focused on the fathers that's available in school districts. Is that true?
So there's three programs. Watchdogs is a program started by Jim Morris right after the shooting. We talked about school shootings, the school shooting in Arkansas. And so Watchdogs gets dads to come to campus and walk around with their kid and help out, you know, open ketchup packages at lunch. And that's one guy a day. And those programs typically average anywhere from 30, 40 dads a year, because they ask a guy to take a full day off and hang out. It's a great program. I have a lot of schools that I help them bring more dads in for that program. All Pro Dads is a group out of Florida, and they tend to have breakfast where the dads and the kids get to talk a little bit, meet other dads. Sometimes those are on campus, sometimes they're off. The pros and cons of that is they are nonprofit. They provide those things for free to the school. They're typically volunteer driven. What we do at Strong Fathers is we are academically focused. We help dads help their kids in school. So we comply with a lot of the federal mandates on family engagement. We're really good at it. We average pre-COVID, the school year 18-19, we did 80-85 programs. We averaged 140 families per program. And we do a reading night. We do a math night. We do a science night. We do a bring your dad to school where dads go into the classroom. So I like these other programs. We typically work alongside them, but we're the only ones that I know of doing anything academic with dads and really at a shotgun level. You know, we really are, like, my 10-week class is very deep. We get into some really serious stuff. This is a foot deep and a mile wide. And that's what we want. We want to get guys in the water, get them to do that. We'll have guys that go on and volunteer. We have guys that, you know, all of a sudden are now the spelling test dad or the math homework dad, the project dad. And if you do that in first grade, then you've got this guy in 10th grade, right? And so that's where I don't mind being a foot deep, because I'm bringing everybody into the water, right? That's what we're wanting to do. And if guys want to swim, we got guys that swim the deep end all the time. We all got guys also sitting there like, I ain't going past my ankles, but they're there. They're doing what they're doing, you know, and like today.
Yeah.
So we did a reading day, and I start out with a book by Eric Carle called Head to Toe. So we act like a penguin. We turn our head. We act like a giraffe. We bend our neck. And you've got some dads just into it automatically. They're ready to go. And then some other guys are like, I ain't doing that. I ain't doing that. And then we act like a monkey. I mean, we're off the charts a little bit. And dads that go at it, the kids love it. And what's happening is a dad that's like, I'm not going to act like a monkey in front of all these other dudes. They see the reaction dad gets from their kids. So that next group acts like a monkey. So through that whole book, we bring in about 80, 90% of the dads. And to finally get, number one, it's cool. Number two, your kids love it. Number three, none of us guys are judging you as another guy because we're all here for our kids. And then you get that 10% that I don't think it's a hard heart. I don't think it's anything like that. It's just like, I'm just not comfortable doing that. I'm not sure how to do this. I don't know, you know, whatever it is. But 90% of the guys are jumping in. And so when we tell them it's important to read to your kids, when we tell them when you read to your kids, something different happens than when mom reads to the kids. That's what they need to hear. So the other part about us being the only ones in the country doing it, our job's pretty easy because nobody else is out there telling dads their value. in their kids' education. So what we do is really easy, because when we tell them, they're like, oh, I'm all about it. And they just didn't know. They haven't heard it.
What happens to kids when their dad reads to them? Tell me more about that.
So when moms read to kids, which is a great thing, moms read to kids, kids learn to read, they learn to love to read, they learn to love books. They did a study, and this is insane as an educator to think about, but we did a study in 1968. Norma Radin did this study that is like, does it matter if parents read to their kids? Like, did you hear that statement? Does it matter if parents read to their kids? Because we had so much faith in the science of education in schools that maybe schools are all we need, right? And so they had a group of kids that had parents read to them, a group of kids that had no parents read to them. And what do you think? The kids that had their parents read to them, their reading scores at the end of the year were much higher. And then in that group of kids that had higher scores because their parents read to them, there was this other group. And they're like, okay, why are these kids significantly higher than the rest of the group? And they went back and looked at the data. And it wasn't that they just had parents reading to them. They had moms and dads reading to them. Some had only dads. So what they found was when moms read, all these great things happen. When dads read to kids, they learn to read. They learn to love to read. They learn to love books. But when dads read to kids, the kids' verbal skills can go up by up to 15%, which doesn't happen when moms read to them.
Wow.
Let me tell you how popular I am when I'm training female teachers. And I had moms in the room today, right? Moms can always come. We don't exclude anybody. And then I'm like, I can read. Like, I know you can read and great things happen. It's just different. It's not better or worse. It's different than when dads read. And so I always tell, I do this on my TED talk. I do it every day that I do a reading program. I'm like, you know, moms read. And the big bad wolf said, little pig. Little pig. And the kids love it. I mean, it's the way moms ought to read. We love that, right? And when dads read, we're like in the big bad world, little pig, let me. You know, the kids are squealing and mom's like, what's going on in there? So I tell that story. I mean, I deal all the time. I was at a school, assistant principal. She heard me, you know, she saw the whole program. She couldn't hardly get to me fast enough at the end of the program after we, you know, got everybody out and started packing up. She goes, what you're talking about? That happened in my house just the other night. I said, what happened? She goes, I'm walking past my daughter's room and my husband is wrapping the book to my daughter. And I'm like, that's awesome.
That's so great.
Did the book rhyme? Did the book rhyme? She goes, no, not at all. And I go, that's even awesomer. And I said, but your daughter hated it? And she goes, no, she loved it. And now I can't read that book because I don't read like dad. And I'm like, but here's the deal. That's dad's book. That's the memory. I do this all the time. And I felt like I didn't read to my kids enough, right? Like I've got all this guilt now that my kids are 25 and 30.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. And they said, no. And so we started talking about books we read, right? Like, oh yeah, you know, I read books to them and there were more than that, but it was just, you know, you're trying to get this magic moment and it's like, it's bedtime for two boys. I mean, it's just WWE all the time, right? But I read The Hobbit to them over time. You know, we'd read a chapter every other night or whatever, but it took us a while to read The Hobbit. And so when the movie The Hobbit came out, they were older, probably in high school and middle school. And one of my crowning achievements is, they're like, you know, Gollum's voice didn't sound right, Dad, because my Gollum voice was nothing like that on the movie. But I'm the one that introduced him to that crazy voice. I mean, I had a different vision of who that guy was, a different voice. A good friend of mine, we have books. They're Texas-based books, but they're all over the country, called Hank the Cow Dog. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
So John Erickson has written, I think, 25, 28 books with Hank the Cow Dog. He's ranch security, and it's from the voice of this dog. And this dad that heard me, so this is how this happened. I told that same story at a school and the dad heard that in second grade, right? It's two sentences out of a 45-minute program. This dad comes in. I'm a band dad in the high school and he comes in with his freshman daughter, wants to join the band dads and goes, you're the dad dude, right? I'm like, yeah, I guess it's my, you know, my hometown. I go, yeah, I guess I'm the dad dude. He goes, you said when she was in second grade, you said when dads read to their kids, the kids' verbal skills go up to 15%. That doesn't happen when moms read to them. I said, that's exactly what I say. And he goes, ever since you told me that, I've been reading to my daughter and my sons every night. He read almost 25 or 28 of those books from Hank the Cow Dog, read them all.
Amazing.
The author comes to our school for an author visit. They're so excited. Kids take a book to get signed. It's all this kind of cool stuff. Dad's not there. Of course, they come home and they're like, man, how was it? It was cool. And he goes, Dad, it was great. I get he signed my book. But he goes, his Hank the Cow Dog's not that very good. It's not very good. Because they'd had 25 versions of dad doing it, you know, so.
That is so incredible.
So I had to do that when my kids were at home because I'd work out of my office.
Yeah.
Because I had a home office. Mm-hmm. And then pandemic hit. I was broke. I mean, we were trying to make things happen. I did all my virtual programs at home and we got things rolling. You know, we pivoted and got things rolling. And so this summer, my wife goes, you're getting an office because I'm not coming home. You know, we thought we were going to be, because I'm not listening to that. And now that she's retired, I have to come to the office because he doesn't feel retired unless I come.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So they're doing flyovers from the Air Force base. I don't know if you can hear the jets. In the background. I don't think so, but I can hear them outside.
No. Okay. I love that story, Michael. So I'm definitely going to include that and also a link to your TED talk. That's fantastic. I want to switch gears here for a minute. So many of our listeners are looking to build partnerships with school districts, and you've been so successful at doing that. So what's your key to success when you're reaching out, building relationships with district leaders to implement your program? What's your strategy? Are you an education leader, the leader of an ed tech company, or a member of an organization supporting education? We continue to hear from leaders like you who have a story to tell, a message to share, or an important initiative that needs greater awareness. 3 years ago, that's exactly what we heard from Doug Roberts, the CEO of the Institute for Education Innovation, when he approached SWPR Group. This led to the launch of a groundbreaking new award that was unlike any other in EdTech. The SUPS Choice Awards, judged exclusively by K-12 superintendents, set IEI on a path to market dominance, increasing vendor partners and superintendent members by more than 30% year over year. Jamie Candy, the CEO of Edmentum, shared with SWPR Group the EdTech company's desire to tell district success stories and to elevate the leaders behind their organization in a more thoughtful and strategic way. Throughout the past 2 years, SWPR Group has established consistent and regular media coverage, authored compelling op-eds, and secured interviews highlighting success stories while also inserting Edmentum into timely topics like AI with national reporters. At SWPR Group, we provide public relations, communication strategies, and thought leadership support for today's changemakers and the brands they champion. We work together with our clients to bring their mission to life by consistently delivering high-quality content, creative communication strategies, and transformational results. What story do you want to tell? Reach out to us using the link in the show notes or visit our website at swpr-group.com.
So what has worked for us, what's worked for me, and it comes from, well, the hardest thing we have is, I told you, schools believe that parent engagement is important, except they don't think it's going to happen. School after school will tell me, well, that may work where you're at, but not our school. And I mainly work in low-income communities, rural communities, inner-city communities. I don't typically work in affluent schools. Affluent schools don't think they need our program when they may need it more sometimes.
Yeah.
Also, all our parents show up. I'm like, yeah, but are they engaged, right? So I'm already trying to sell something that they don't even know they need, right? But they want it, but they don't think it's possible. That's the biggest issue. So I do some emails, but I mainly get my emails. I don't buy a whole lot of lists. I'm starting to do that a little bit. But I used to speak at a ton of conferences. And what I found was kind of pre-social media, that's how long I've been doing this, pre-social media and stuff, schools are on an annual calendar, an annual budget. And if you don't get in early on that budget or that calendar, it's a year sales cycle, right? And so you got to stay out there. But what I found was a year from the conference, almost every time for like the first 5 or 6 years I was in business, a year after the conference where I met that person, we started doing business. So it was, you know, they thought of me, they thought that was great. We ought to do that. We'll put some in the budget, but now we're running and, you know, and then it would come around. It's gotten to be a lot quicker because, you know, number one, we kind of know how to manipulate some of that and get them down quicker. So I don't do a lot of cold calls. And I had some guys that worked for me go, I'm going to go talk to this principal. I said, no, you're not. They said, why? I said, so this is from my principal experience. Salesman would come in, cold call me. And it's like, look, that may be something I need. And it had to be a really great thing for me to listen. That may be something I need, but right now, I got a kid in here that's screaming their head off, or we had to wrestle a kid to the ground, or I've got two girls fighting over a boy, or I've got a mad parent. So I had a sales guy come into my office one day, and I kind of liked his product, and I kind of liked the dude, right? Like, we'd had pretty good rapport. Uh-huh. He came in my office one day, and while he was in my office, I had to leave because a kid set one of those big rolls of toilet paper on fire in the middle school bathroom. So we got to go put it out. There's smoke in the building. You know, it wasn't a major danger, but major hassle. We got to go find the kid. We got to get him prosecuted. You know, we got to get the cops there. We got to call the parents. And so, of course, he left and he started coming around and I just hated this guy. Like, I'm like, oh, I can't stand that guy. And I finally, it took me a year to go, why do I hate that guy? I thought, you know, he hit me on the right day and came in for a visit. And I realized, I hate this guy because I think he's the one that set the fire in the middle school bathroom. And that's what I tell like my guys that wanted to sell for me. And I even had some guys lately that wanted to sell for me, but they don't understand the product either. But I said, principals, they don't have time to listen to it. So when I go to a conference, we write proposals that get us in the conference. We write titles that make people want to come. So we know this from marketing is what problem are you solving? And we are not just father engagement, which is kind of very niche, right? We're family engagement, and schools are struggling how to do that. They don't have enough time. They don't have good ideas. There's a lot of fear around it because, like, what if we screw this up? You know, if we bring parents in, it's going to be a train wreck, and it's not. And so I go to conference sessions, school board, superintendent conferences, teacher conferences, principal conferences, or I do a lot of early childhood conferences. That will get us there. And so because we've been doing it so long, when they ask, like, yeah, but I said, well, here's how you handle that. And they're like, oh, and I'm like, and it works here. It's worked here, 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 and here because we continually work the process, right?
Right.
And so when they go to a conference, they're looking at all these things that I need to know. What am I looking for? What are our needs? And when they see my session, they're like, wait, that sounds like something I need. But I bet it doesn't work for us. And in 45 minutes to 90 minutes, mm-hmm. I get a chance to say, here's what you think. And they're like, it's like he knows. I'm like, yeah, because I've been doing this a while. And schools are schools, right? So you're in Oregon, I'm in Texas. Now, all the regulations and all these other issues are different. Culture's a little different, but the schools are schools. So when I go,
a little different.
Well, yeah, culture can be, but it's crazy because as much as we may have red and blue states and all these different things, schools are all dealing with the same issue because yep. I love public schools, and it's always a granddad raising grandkids. They almost, for some reason, seem to be from Michigan, and they were in Vietnam or Korea, and they moved to Texas, and they hate Texas, and they hate people. And they're like, because we put our flyers out in English and Spanish. Hello, we're in Texas, but really, we're in the U.S. And they hate it. They're like, I hate this Spanish stuff, and I'm like, and this is Marxist or whatever. I tell them that schools are the most democratic thing we do, because if you live within these lines, you get to go to school here. You don't pay. It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter how much money you make. You get to go to school here, and you have every opportunity, hopefully. You know, and I think that's what we try to strive for in schools, knowing there's inequities and those issues. But that's the whole thing. And so, you know, when I start talking about dads, it's interesting because people think that you've got to deal with Black dads differently than white dads, differently than Asian dads, differently than Hispanic dads. And I do note that cultural challenges are definitely different. Culture may be different, but dads are not different. Like, dads don't love their kids differently.
Right.
Dads don't want a different future for their kids. You and I may not agree on what kind of future we want for our kids, but we all want a future, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's where we tie that back. Every once in a while, people are like, why are we doing this? I'm like, if you don't help your kid get a better education, they won't move out. And you want to see what my dad's like, okay, go back. Tell me that again. What was that? Because I do some high school truancy program, and a lot of times the parents had a bad school experience, so we don't get a lot of support for schools. And they're like, they just want the tax dollars. I hated this when I was in school. My kid hates school, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, here's the deal. If they don't graduate high school, here's how much money they won't make. If they don't get into college, this is how much money they won't make. If they don't take a trade, if they don't make this much money, they're not moving out. You know, and that's honestly how we've turned some dads. I'm like, I know that school may or may not make a difference for your kid, but that paper makes a difference. And this is what they've got to do. So when I first started doing my own podcast and recording, I said, a lot, right?
That's fantastic. I love that, Michael. I'm curious about, you were honored by the 2012 White House Fatherhood Champion of Change. That is an incredible achievement. Tell our listeners how that came about.
So fatherhood at the federal level really started with the Clinton administration and really came from Al Gore, who was really pushing federal fatherhood initiatives. I had just started into fatherhood. A lot of the organizations that I was working with, you know, competitors or colleagues, however you want to look at it, started around 95, 96. That's when the Clinton administration was pushing that. And so I'd been in talks when Obama became president, there was a lot around his story of not having his dad around and those things. And so they were doing meetings at the White House. I work in 45 states. I'm kind of a one-man show, but I'm national. Now I'm international, whatever. And I kept I'm like, dude, when am I going to get the invite? Well, you know, I'm like, no, we're using federal dollars to do good work. We're not begging for federal dollars. And so they're going to announce, this is the backstory, right? This is the behind the music story. So the Obama administration, the White House Office of Family of Neighborhood and Faith-Based Partnerships was kind of around all these initiatives, and they were going to announce their new fatherhood initiative. And I knew people that I'd been working with up there and all these things, so I know where it came from. But they're announcing this great new initiative from the White House, and they said, we're going to call it Strong Fathers, Strong Families. That's the name of my company. That's the name of my LLC.
Oh my gosh.
I'm about to puke my guts up, right? And I've got my text is blowing up like, what the hell? You know, da, da, da. I'm like, yeah, I get it. And my mother-in-law, who doesn't hardly pay, I mean, she loves me. She thinks I'm great or whatever, but she doesn't pay attention to much. But she heard this on the news. She's like, that's so great. You're working with the president. I'm like, I'm not working with the president. They stole my name. They don't have Google in the West Wing. Right. And so people are like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm going to sue the leader of the free world. What do you think I'm going to do? I'm just going to, you know, suck it up. But I let the people that my friends and colleagues at that office go, let them know exactly how I felt about it. I'm like, do y'all not have Google? That's the name of my company. And they're like, well, and I finally told them, and it came true. I said, look, I'm out here hustling all day, every day. Y'all have a federal initiative. People will know about me way before they know about you. You will somehow, whether it's at the end of the administration or somewhere in it, because I'd been in this business a while, and I said, it will go away. We'll still be here. And sure enough, that's what happened. People would see me and go, hey, I hear. I'm like, no, that's not my stuff. But they actually pivoted at the White House. There's this idea that Black fathers aren't around, and that's not true. All the data shows Black dads are very involved. Black dads are maybe more involved than white fathers at an early age. So part of my job, I mean, I've been a white guy like almost my whole life, right? But most of it. Anyways, I'm a really big advocate for Black fathers because I see these guys on the ground every day. And there are challenges in the community. That's not, you know, there's challenges within the culture of that. We're trying to change that. But there's so many great dads out there. And there's not money in talking about, that's why I did my TED talk on fatherfulness. There's not talk about the great things going on. People are making money from the deficits, not the assets. And I believe we need to, you know, build the assets in. So anyways, I just let them know how I felt. I'm pretty sure, even though nothing was said, I was honored because I do believe we're doing good work and they knew the work we were doing. I also believe it was almost like hush money. Like, look, if you'll just shut up. I mean, I wasn't even going around, you know, but it was a nice honor and people knew what my work was. So I will take that as an honor. And at the same time, I'm pretty sure they're like, yeah, we probably should have done that. But it's kind of like what I talked about with nonprofits. The idea that dads weren't around or that this was somehow negative towards families or single moms, which it's not, they pivoted to mentoring, which I believe in mentoring programs. But if we reach the dads, these kids don't need mentors as much.
Oh, interesting.
The dad is the built-in mentor. So
yeah,
if I get a dad, like today, I had dads with pre-K and kindergarten kids, and I told them the importance of reading to their kids. If I catch that dad, I'm going to have him in seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade. If a guy comes from a fraternity or if a guy comes from Rotary or if a guy comes from, you know, Kiwanis or whatever to mentor a kid, that's fantastic. But the chance of that person being around throughout the grades, you know, is different. And there are kids that don't have anybody around. They don't have a dad anywhere. And we get that. But also when I bring the dads in, they like, what about these other kids? And I'm like, they sit next to your kid. They're the ones that should be on your baseball team. Mm-hmm. When you take your kid fishing, maybe you should take that kid fishing, you know. And I ended up informally mentoring a lot of kids when my kids were in band because they didn't have somebody. So they got structure from me and they got expectations from me and they got praise from me. And it wasn't a mentoring program. It's just like, I know they don't have anybody. And so but I had a lot of dads around me that were doing the same thing. So that's how we, now, when I first got that honor, that was in bold under my signature on my email. And now it's gotten to where it's not, but I mean, it was year after year, it just got smaller because it was 2012, you know, so we're coming up on the 10 year anniversary.
There you go. You should have a celebration.
10 year anniversary of Fatherhood Champ. I'm very proud of it. I was great to be around colleagues, you know, that are doing the same kind of work around the country. The funny part was my wife had her phone on the front row and she's very steady and took a great video of me. And so the video is usually the whole group. Well, if you go see my video on YouTube, I spliced in the regular sound from the White House video with a close-up. And even my buddy's like, how did you get a close-up? How come you? And I'm like, nah, I spliced my own close-up in on my video. But it's on YouTube as well. It was Strong Fathers in the White House. So, and that has helped give us some credibility. But our credibility comes when people do get us in the door and we fill the place with that.
That's the storytelling aspect, which we're always talking about in the PR. It's telling the story about the success that you've had with those dads. And I love your website and your video, but I want to go back to this for 1 minute because I think it's so important that in PR, oftentimes it's not what you go out and seek. It's advocating for yourself and it's coming up with strategic ways to build relationships where you're standing up for yourself and you're putting yourself out there. It's not always, you're not going to be recognized authentically. That rarely happens. It's about asking for what you deserve and strategically going after it and advocating for yourself. And having a partner, like for us, it's SWPR. We partner with our clients to do that for them. So it's all about that. And it's all also about who you know, really.
Right. And so that goes back to the conferences is you may not get a client right off the bat.
Totally.
But you keep showing up. Like, so I'm Texas. I wore a tie for a living. I work with dads. I work with mainly blue collar, working class, middle class dads. So today at school is exactly what I have on now. I have a long sleeve polo, jeans, boots, and I'm in Texas, so I got to have a big buckle. So, you know, it's like the law. But because I'm working with men that work, they don't want to hear from a guy in a tie. They don't want to hear from a guy in a suit. So I would show up at these conferences, federal conferences too, and everybody's in their nicest suit. They got their nice shoes on, and I'm in jeans and boots, and they're like, who is this guy? And I just kept showing up and kept talking about what we did and kept showing it. And so even at these other conferences, and it is about who you know. So we've had advocates, and I haven't used them as well as I think I could have, but I'm like, who else around you would like to do this program? Or they can't help but talk about it. And so when they go talking about it, like I have schools in East Texas because of one superintendent that just kept talking about what was going on at his school. I love working with them. The good part about my job is that if they get me, they get it, right? In other words, I get to work with really good schools because they're forward thinking enough to we need to get parents. They're forward thinking enough that we don't have time. Who can we get? And I'm the guy. And we train people too. Like I don't have to go out and do this. I have manuals and a training and it's built for other people to do. I did not want it to be the Mike Hall show, right? It's like, I mean, it's got all my crazy personality in it, but it's got to be anybody can pull this off because if not, we're not going to get everything done. But yeah, it is who you know, and it's telling that story. And that story is, you know, how this will work for you guys. People think a lot of that White House deal, people are like, you ought to be on Oprah. You ought to be on. And I'm like, principals don't watch Oprah. Very few school board members watch Oprah, right? They say you could be on the morning news shows. I'm like, principals aren't watching. They're at school.
Yeah, they're swamped, right?
All the PR stuff that people think works for other products, this is business to business. Mm-hmm. This is an annual sales cycle. So there's two things that work for us. Number one, telling our story. How do we help schools comply? What we do is awesome. It's great. It's got a ton of kumbaya. It's a very high value, but we've got to show people how we check the boxes. So we qualify for Title I money, Title III, because we do everything in Spanish, which is ESL, Title V, which is rural schools. The new ARP-ESSER money that's come out from the feds to try to help people recover from COVID, kids recover from COVID, has anything for us that has a family engagement component, we're the guys, right? We're the ones that can pull that off or train you to do it. And then after school programs had a family engagement component. And that's where we really developed all these through a couple of after school grants that we had when we first started. That's what probably kept us in business. And really, like the reading morning I did today was developed from that money that we first got. And we didn't just go do it. We developed something that's replicable, portable, and will work for, you know, like it works in inner city schools. It works in rural schools. And it checks off all these boxes.
So it's paying attention. It's paying attention and being aware of the challenges that your key audience are facing.
Right.
All those challenges. Michael, this has been such a great, fun chat. I mean, you are totally hilarious and
thank you.
A just lovable personality. And I think our listeners will feel the same way. So thank you for joining us. And I'm going to include a lot of these links. And I think your tips are so replicable to any company in the sector. So thank you. So appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Talk soon. Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you enjoyed the show, if you wouldn't mind leaving a review, we'd be so grateful. This helps other listeners find and learn about our show. And please reach out if you're interested in learning more about how we can elevate the leaders of your organization with our PR services. If you'd like, you can even shoot me a direct email at Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at swpr-group.com. I look forward to hearing from you, and we will see you next time.